Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. Go Steelers! Go Steelers! Say go Steelers! Go Steelers!
Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. This was not a roller coaster ride. It was an inexorable underground subway ride, exploring our ability to stave off that feeling of impending doom that always presaged the inevitable momentum shift in favor of the evil empire. It took almost every last drop of blood, a full 59 minutes and 46 seconds, for the foreboding to be ameliorated as a flood of ecstasy took hold over Steeler Nation, Tom Brady's pass soaring high over the outstretched hands of Julian Edelman and harmlessly to the turf, bringing victory to a Pittsburgh team under siege. It's December 17th, 2018, episode 70. This is Tom from the Washington, D.C. Outpost. Nick is joining me from the Houston Outpost. Nicky, John, we did it.
We got him. We got him. We've only been doing this podcast for about 2 years, a little over 2 years if you count the incubation phase. But I have been waiting to do this particular episode of the podcast for about 7 years. The Pittsburgh Steelers defeated the New England Patriots. And what basically was a playoff game for the Steelers. All the rest of their AFC contemporaries in the playoff race all won earlier in the day. So if the Steelers had lost this game, the playoffs would have been pretty much gone as well. Now, we didn't get the joy of knocking the Patriots out of anything, but I don't care. I don't think you can undersell how incredible it felt to see that ball hit the ground when you thought that for sure Tom Brady was going to vanquish us again and yet another one of his two-minute drills at the end of the game. I mean, I've been riding high. I didn't even sleep last night, intentionally.
Hey, it was a night I could get to sleep. I think for the audience to appreciate this, maybe everybody's aware of this, but the Steelers have lost five straight to the Patriots over the last since 2011 and 6 of 8 going back all the way through Mike Tomlin's tenure. Frustration.
Not to mention three AFC championship games and then compounded by the Jesse James game last year. I mean, it was just time. And the Patriots, a lot of people are saying today, it's not the Patriots of old. And that may be true. They've gotten a little bit older and they made their fair share of mistakes. But make no mistake, they're still a Super Bowl contender. They may not be the AFC shoo-in that they have been for the last 20 years, but they're a good team still with a lot of good players. And the Steelers, almost unsurprisingly, after losing to the lowly hapless Raiders, came to play in this game. And they seriously showed up. What a huge win for the Steelers. And they earned it. They weren't given it.
True. And I wasn't kidding during that opening, the emotional, I wasn't up and down. I was nervous the entire game. And sure enough, the score was always within reach from Brady. And that's what it felt like, and especially at the end. We had a magnificent defensive play to stop what looked like to be an inevitable touchdown.
I mean, the story of the game is who the hell thought the Pittsburgh Steelers would ever beat the New England Patriots at a score of 17-10. Then you throw in the fact that the Patriots – okay, so – let's take it back a little bit because I completely agree with you. I don't think it comes as a surprise to anybody. I was physically shaking the whole game and for 2 hours after the game. And then today I only stopped shaking when I started Googling Tom Brady sad on Google. And I had a nice laugh. And at that point I realized like, oh, my blood pressure is actually lowered. But it was a weird, like, throwback dirty Steelers win. Like, back when they were winning Super Bowls, they would just always find ways to win. It wasn't always pretty, but people would always make big plays when the time was right. And this game started a little bit different. The Steelers went down on a dominant opening possession march and scored a touchdown to start, which I think is like the first Steelers touchdown, like opening drive touchdown against the Patriots. I mean, in like the Tomlin era or something like that. Something
close since they started wearing helmets.
Yeah, the first helmeted Steelers touchdown drive to open the game against the Patriots, which is also around the time that Tom Brady started playing. But Steelers go down there, and you know, okay, this is exactly what needs to happen. We all know the story here. Steelers have to score 40 points, or they're not going to win this game. The defense has been too bad. Tom Brady and Belichick and McDaniels and Gronk have carved up this defense time and time again. They have a coaching advantage. We are totally lacking for even the personnel and the players on defense to match up with all their weapons. I mean, it was at the point when before the game, we were hearing that Artie Burns and Cam Sutton were going to start over Sensabaugh and Mike Hilton. It just seemed like desperation. Like, you're not even putting in good players. You're just taking out guys and rolling the dice. It didn't look
change
like
for change's sake.
Yeah, exactly. So you're going in there. Steelers score the first possession. You're saying, okay, this is what needs to happen. Ben needs to go supernova. We need to see a Carolina Panthers game. Patriots get the ball back, and it feels like playing the Patriots again. Three plays, and I don't know what kind of disrespect the Steelers have for Chris Hogan, the receiver, because every time he scores against the Steelers, going back to the championship game, he doesn't have anybody within 20 yards of him. In fact, there was a statistic, I forget who posted this today, but it's kind of everywhere, and ESPN was even showing it, that Chris Hogan wide open, you know, 60-yard touchdown was, out of all the NFL games, out of every single play this year, the most wide open wide receiver. There wasn't anyone even on his side of the field and on that big coverage bust. So the Patriots score right away, and we say, all right, well, here we go again. It's gonna have to be 40-34, and look how easy it is for the Patriots to score.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, those first two series indicated that we were going to need to be both teams would have to be high flying during this game. Predictions for you know, a combined score in the 70s. I don't know but then the game settled down pretty quickly after that.
It settled down super quick. And I think the Steelers got sacked 2 out of 3 times when they got the ball back. So you're already just terrified, because you know you need to be up by at least 26 to feel comfortable against the Patriots. And it just wasn't happening. But you know what? The Steelers shut the Patriots down for the rest of the game. And it's not like, you know, 2006 football, where you can literally shut someone down like a high-powered offense and prevent them from getting first downs. The Patriots moved the ball here or there, but overall, I mean, the defense really held them in check. And the story is the Steelers win 17-10, but the offense played better than 17 points. We'll kind of go into the reasons of why they left points off the board and why that happened. But they moved the ball very well. They had a great offensive game plan. They had a lot of newcomers step up. And then the defense, maybe they weren't quite as good as only giving up 10 points to the Patriots, and they almost crumbled again. It looked like it was going to happen. Steelers go up by 7, 2 minutes and 30 seconds, hand it back to Brady. It takes him all of about 1 minute to get to the 11-yard line. But then they stepped up. And they made plays. And really, it wasn't painted by Michelangelo, but it was a really good game because both sides of the ball, all three sides really, made huge plays when it counted. Maybe the biggest play of the season is Joe Hayden intercepting an opposing quarterback. An unbelievable job where the Patriots got into the red zone, where the Steelers defense held them to 0-3, a huge reason why they won in this game. Tom Brady tries to throw it away to the sideline. Joe Hayden jump mans up in between. I mean, it makes it so much sweeter that's in between these two guys, but Gronk and Edelman, it makes an unbelievable high pointing catch, toe tapping, getting his feet in bounds to make a pick in the fourth quarter with about 7 minutes left. And then the offense goes and wears down 5 minutes of clock and gets a field goal. and huge plays on that drive were a couple third down conversions where Ben made some pinpoint throws, one to Vance, and then extended the play and made a throw to Jalen Samuels. And when that drive ended with another huge play from our Steelers fan favorite, Chris Boswell, who nailed the 48-yard field goal in a little bit of redemption. Just huge plays, I think, is what was the difference in this game for the Steelers.
I think something that was particularly interesting about the Brady interception, the statistic they threw up there, that was his first red zone interception since December 2016 against the Ravens. More interesting to me was the fact that Hayden stayed in bounds. And it looked like he was out of bounds easily from the initial viewing of the play. I've watched that several times. When you go back to watch it, Gronkowski is coming from the inside of the field out and clearly could have swept Hayden out of bounds as close as Hayden was. Edelman came from the outside in and basically formed a wall between Hayden and the sideline. And I think that Edelman was the guy who prevented Hayden from getting pushed out of bounds. Just kind of crazy things happening.
Yeah, you're right. And for him to make that catch, he jumped up and high pointed it. And we've been saying this since Hayden got on the Steelers. I mean, obviously the Steelers are allergic to turnovers. They've dropped so many. Even Hayden dropped one last week. But we've seen Hayden high point the ball, something that I don't even think the Steelers like having those guys on their team since Troy left. Maybe it's just a matter of respect. They don't want to, you know, have anyone infringing on the Troy territory, but we've seen him do stuff like that before. But it was an unbelievable catch to go up in between those guys. Yeah, Brady was trying to throw it away and it was very uncharacteristic, but not many people are going to catch it. And you're right, is the ball actually rolled our way a little bit for once, because Edelman did sort of hold him in bounds. I mean, an amazing, huge play. And the Steelers made them where they counted. The defense held them to 0-3 in the red zone. I mean, the big moment in the game was when the Patriots got to the 11-yard line. It was second down. And everybody wants to talk about how the Patriots' mistakes are what won the game for the Steelers. Now, they're a reason. I mean, that certainly factors in. They had 14 penalties for over 100 yards? That's the most for the Patriots in over 2 or 3 years. You never see that happen for them. But actually, a lot of those penalties, including the holding call on that second down from the 11-yard line with 30 seconds left in the game, those were caused by Steelers players. The offensive and defensive lines for the Steelers dominated the trenches in this game. And there were a couple holding calls on the Patriots offensive line called because Steelers players were ripping through to get to Brady. And on that second down from the 11-yard line, Stephon Tuitt burst through, and whoever it was, I don't think it was Cannon, it was 69, who ended up holding him. The Steelers drew that penalty. They made that luck.
Yeah, good point. There were three offensive holding penalties giving us 30 yards. There were five false starts. Then a plethora of penalties, like the big pass interference call on the New England 43 that set up the AB touchdown, but
right,
offsides, delay of game, the rest of these look just seem like a lack of discipline, but clearly the false starts, not clearly, but I'm guessing that had something to do with the home team advantage, and the offensive holding was a testament to what this defensive line has been doing lately.
Yeah, the false starts that's usually the sign of a sloppy team. And it's so weird to see the New England Patriots get so many pre-snap penalties. But, you know, rewatching the game, I really did realize, I mean, that might have been that's the best Heinz crowd I can remember. I mean, I think the last time you've heard of a Heinz crowd getting that loud was probably the championship game against the Ravens. And
hey, look,
go please. For it.
I was just going to note that, you know, that may have been that typically sloppiness, as you said, but the Patriots were 30th in terms of penalties favorably, you know, only 43 penalty yards per game compared to the rest of the NFL.
Compared to the Steelers, who have luckily tamed that down recently. By the way, what did we tell you guys early in the season? There's still room for the Steelers to improve. They can take down their penalties. They've done that. They won that battle. There's a few more things we'll talk about later. But I totally agree with you. You know, rewatching that game, you realized, you know, home field advantage is supposed to be a big deal. That's why they say it's hard to go to Seattle. It's hard to go to Kansas City. At this point, it's hard to go to New England. It's hard to go to Pittsburgh, not always because of the crowd, but mostly just because the Steelers play better there and Ben plays a lot better there. But against the Patriots, it was a proper home field advantage. And a lot of those false starts are due to crowd noise. I mean, that's big time going forward. So it looks like the Steelers can't only improve, but we can improve. You can improve, Steelers Nation, and actually help the team.
And you know who else improved? At least improved his stock in our eyes? Mike Tomlin.
I mean, this is the Tomlin special, isn't it? It's almost like he creates these chaotic, dramatic situations only so that he can juice them into fuel to pump into the veins of the Steelers so they can squeeze the life out of Tom Brady's stupid head. Anyways, Mike Tomlin, you got to give him credit. Two big things about this game. The game planning was fantastic. The Steelers came out on offense and they ran a ton of five wide receiver sets. They did what the Patriots have done to us so many times, is what the Steelers did to the Patriots this time around. And it really kept the Patriots guessing. They love to, they're kind of old Steelers liking this and Ravens liking the fact that they like to disguise a lot of blitzes and it's hard for you to figure out what they're doing. Belichick, of course, famous for that. Well, the five wide receiver thing kind of makes these plays go bing, bang, boom, boom. It's too quick for you to mess around with those exotic blitzes. They don't have time to get home. They don't have time to confuse. So they did that well. Steelers Nation has been crying themselves to sleep, thinking that the Steelers need to run the ball more, even when they hadn't been running effectively as of recent. But I think, so of course, we're bearing one of the leads here, is that speaking of running the ball, is Jalen Samuels. Huge game. But I think one of the reasons that the Steelers had such a great time running the ball, besides the fact that the Patriots have really struggled to stop the run recently, I think one of the reasons is the Steelers lined up in that five wide and they spread it out a lot and they kind of used the pass to set up the run. And then by going five wide, they really spread out the Patriots defenders and then ended up pulling a lot of offensive linemen, which the Steelers are very good at. Obviously, David DeCastro is great at it. Marquise Pouncey, pretty much anyone can. And they used that to their advantage. I don't think the Steelers, I mean, at least without James Conner, are a team that's just going to line up an I formation and get to their 25 runs. I thought they ran very creatively. That was a great game plan. You got to give Tomlin and Fiedner credit.
Give Tomlin a lot of credit. But you and I always talk about process, and there were a couple of things that ding Tomlin on in this game. One is, I'm sure everybody saw the graphic of Mike Tomlin's challenges throughout the years. He's 0 for 10 over the last 3 years. Before that, I mean, he has had like 50% success going back to 2013. So he's getting some bad advice, or maybe we need a new iPad to see some of these plays. I don't think he's very strategic on these challenges.
Yeah, that's par for the course. And the Steelers in this game were also par for the course. They basically played the same way that they have for the last four games. They've been the better team on the field in all three of those losses. And ironically, before those three losses, they played Jaguars, where they were not the better team on the field until the very end of the fourth quarter. And they lucked out with one there. Well, I think the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders lucked out against the Steelers when they played, because they really dominated. They were just finding creative ways to lose and to turn the ball over and to miss kicks and stuff like that. Well, Tomlin, he gets challenges wrong, and the Steelers still made the same mistakes that they've made in the last few games. Ben turned the ball over two times. The defense was this close to letting, like, what is it, three games in a row when they lose the game on the last two-minute drive of the game? I mean, it's the same thing. Brady went right down the field. Yes, we drew the holding penalty, but damn, that helped. If we didn't get that call, you got to think the Patriots would have scored. And then, of course, we're missing kicks. So it's interesting that they played the same, and like we said, I think they lost those three games by a total of 13 points. The margin for error and what makes a victory or a loss is so thin in the NFL, and what I think made the difference is those huge plays that people made in critical moments during that stretch in the fourth quarter.
Sure, and I don't want to deal in hypotheticals, but let's go back to something you were talking about, and that is that drive near the end of the game that New England had. They find themselves on the 30, 2 minutes and 41 seconds left, no timeouts. I'm sorry, this is where we had the ball on the New England 30. We passed the ball down to Juju. It would have been a great catch on the 5 yard line and maybe even stumbling into the end zone. It didn't happen. Then, with no timeouts, 2:41 left, should we have kicked it the way we did? Or should we have gone, should this be four down territory? We would have pinned New England back on the 30. By the way, New England only had one drive of over 70 yards the entire game. So who are you going to depend on, Boz for this field goal or the defense to stop New England way back there? And with the possibility that if we went four downs, we could have gotten the first down at that point.
Right. Well, I think if it were fourth and one or two, I think Tomlin would have been really tempted to go for it. And I wouldn't have really blamed him for that. I think what happened on that pass to Juju that he almost made the great catch on, the Patriots just got a great blitz. And I think that the Steelers were probably not trying to go for the end zone there. This isn't the Todd Haley era. I think that Ben just had pressure bearing down on him, and he knew he had Juju one-on-one, so he threw it up to him. And if they had been four down territory, they would have thrown something underneath to say like, okay, we're not going for all or nothing. We know we have four downs, so you try to pick up less yards at a time. Now it's fourth and six. I definitely don't think you go for it there. I think they made the right decision by kicking it.
Because he made it. But let's face it, Boz did not have a good trajectory coming up to that point.
And would you rather so? If it's fourth and two, sure. But I think the fact that they threw the incompletion on the play before kind of tipped your hand.
Fair enough. Maybe I'm splitting hairs there. But
if it was fourth and one or two, I would have been down. I would have been down to go for it. I don't have confidence in putting all your eggs in the fourth and six conversion basket. There's specific plays to convert on fourth and one or two. And that's more situational type thing. You can run or pass right there. You know, everyone knows like, well, he has to pass it. But I mean, it's a good thought. I'm with you. I mean, was I confident when Boswell went up for that 48 yard field goal? No. Did I even watch him kick it? No, I left the room. Thank God he made it.
Where do I get my own team? Actually, I was more confident Boz making the 48 because maybe not ironically, but there is probably less pressure in a very difficult kick that you would be blamed less for than missing an extra point or a short chip shot field goal. There's so what do I have to lose here? It's 48 yards.
Yeah, no, just go and swing it. There's definitely something to that. And, you know, I think, Tom, you're right. You give the guy credit because the decision worked out, but we all thought he was going to miss. You know, but also how Steelers is it? It's just so Steelers, days of our Steelers. Of course he's going to make that kick and not the one earlier. You know, they live on the drama. And like we said, just getting back to Tomlin and giving him credit, the game planning was excellent on offense. We talked about the variety on defense. The game plan was also excellent. Last year, they had a great game plan against the Patriots and they mostly stopped them the whole game. And last year we saw them do something that they didn't do the whole year, which was play a ton of man. And this game, we saw them do stuff that they haven't done the whole year as well, which is play every coverage known to man and do a ton of pre-snap movements. And sometimes they got caught in them, but more times than not, they were holding the Patriots to short gains. And it seemed like before when we play the Patriots, they're just picking up chunk play after chunk play. And listen, Gronk is not Gronk anymore, but Jared Cook carved us up. So it's not like you need Hall of Fame version of Gronk to carve us up. He's still in the game. But it seemed like the Steelers were constantly forcing third down. And at one point in the game, I think the Patriots were like 1 for 6 on third down. So that game planning on offense and defense was really successful.
Yeah. So before we jump over the offense, let's talk about the Steelers running back factory.
The running back factory. Well, last thing before we get into the factory, I wanted to give Tomlin credit for one more thing, which was the game planning was great on offense and defense, but also just the emotional element is great. I mean, to be able to have the team that doesn't blink, he loves that quote of not blinking. And in the post-game presser, he took it even a step further, saying, sometimes when you want to blink, you just got to cut your eyelids off. Love it. Gruesome. Graphic. The mantra of a warrior, if you will. But to have the Steelers, you know, on the brink of extinction here against the total kryptonite, when they beat the Patriots, they lose because the NFL is a piece of crap. Okay? To hold it together like that and really to have the defense come up big and make a huge stop at the end of the game, got to give them total credit. Sorry, didn't mean to get us off topic, but I wanted to make sure it was known.
So – James who? Because now we have Jalen Samuels.
Let's keep going down the list. Jalen Samuels.
Next man up.
Yeah, another big story of the game. He was
19 rushing attempts.
Yeah,
19 rushing attempts, 142 yards, 7.5 yards a run.
And it really was like that. It wasn't just one or two long runs that made him look like he had a good stat line. He had a couple 20-plus yarders. He had a bunch of 8 or 10 yarders. He ran incredibly well on that final drive for the Steelers where they milked a ton of the clock down. And which you can – I guess you can argue whether that was a good idea or not, right? Giving the ball back to Tom Brady with 2:30, only down by 7, was never our intention. But anyways, I'm half kidding there. I mean, you got to move the ball, and they were doing a great job. And damn, if Juju could have came down with that catch in the end zone, or if Ben could have put it a little in front or something, what a way that would have been to end the game. But who cares? Sure. We won.
But let's just to recap that last drive. Samuels, after Ben made that great pass to Vance McDonald to get the first down with 3rd and 7, Samuels had 2 consecutive runs of 5 yards, first down, missed pass to AB. Samuels comes back for that 20-yard pass, 3rd and 9. So awesome. And I love the stumble. First of all, I thought he tripped in the interview after. He said, no, I was just killing time.
He just
pulled a cigarette
calm
out of my back pocket, lit it up, took a toke.
He's calm. He took a toke right there. He said, let me sit down right here real quick, and let me get another first down in a minute, baby. You already know. It wasn't the most graceful fall down, but yeah, it was intentional. And to have the presence of mind to do that, I mean, it's such a big deal. You see games all over the NFL all the time where people don't know how to make that play. But he was excellent. He same report card from him and certain things from last week. It didn't seem like he knew how to hit holes correctly. That's the most carries he's ever got, the most yards he's ever gotten in his life, including high school and middle school. He's always been this tweener guy. So for a guy who doesn't get that many carries, he ran great. He's very economical. He's kind of a one-cut guy. He'll make a shift here. You're not going to tackle him right around the legs, and he'll just sort of get the most out of the play. And it was an amazing job by Randy Feitner finding the plays that work for him, specifically one of the famous Le'Veon plays, which is that really cool counter pitch play where he's standing on the right side of Ben, and they pitch it to him, and then he cuts it all the way back across to the left. It's like a short pitch. Like, instead of throwing it all the way out to him, it's just sort of a 1 foot thing, and it gets the defense flowing in one direction. He cuts it back, and he probably had 50 plus yards off of that one play, which they ran, I think, 6 times alone.
Yeah. And I think it was, you know, we talked about this last week. He is not exactly a burner. This to me is a huge testament to the offensive line opening up some holes. I mean, I think the game planning, as you said, was good. Feitner put together, put together some good formations, but man, offensive line, there were tunnels you could drive a truck through.
Absolutely. And we don't want that point to get lost in this podcast, because this is what's making the Steelers dangerous. Their offensive and defensive lines are dominating people. Yes, the Patriots did rip off a bunch of runs up the middle throughout the course of that game, but when it counted, the Steelers held, and they were constantly pressuring Brady, collapsing that pocket and everything. And like you said, the offensive line is opening up huge holes, and there is still room for improvement. We'll get into a little bit of that later. But Jalen Samuels coming out party, he played fantastic. The offensive line did great, yes, but man, he made a lot of those yards himself and got them more out of plays than what was there for him, you know? So besides Jalen Samuels, of course, you had some contributions at key moments from Juju early in the game when the Steelers were driving. I think it was the first drive. He caught that beautiful ran. He just mossed the guy. He's doing it left and right. Or Ben threw that dagger on like 2nd and 14 up the right sideline, and Ben and Juju jumped over the guy and grabbed the ball over his head. I mean, that was a critical play to keep the drive moving. Obviously, AB had a beautiful touchdown catch from a fantastic throw from Ben, threading the needle in between 3 guys, as is tradition. And they made plays when they had to, but nobody had a huge stat line. And this was another thing we were talking about. I don't know if we talked about on air, but before the game, we said, like, listen, some role players are going to have to step up. And step up they did. It seems like everyone had 1 or 2 plays that was very critical. Vance, great touchdown catch. Awesome catch on 3rd down and 6 on that final drive that we talked about. Very nice catch. Eli Rogers really started the team off with the Eli plan. didn't even expect that, right? He came in and picked up right where he left off, made some nice first down catches. Even Ridley got some revenge on his old team when the Steelers were backed up one of the many times inside their own 10-yard line, made a 10-yard run. Switzer had a couple nice little catches. And most satisfyingly of all, James Washington coming out party with his fellow rookie, Jalen Samuels. I mean, how amazing was that catch up the sideline?
Huge combat catch, exactly what we were hoping he would do when he demonstrated that in the preseason.
Totally. And that's what I like about that catch is when we look at players and we try to predict how good are they going to be or try and figure out are they even going to be good, you need some glimmers of something and something consistent, like at least one thing that they do well where you know, like, okay, he can do – Sammy Coates can run deep and catch the ball. It's just – it was – so consistent and not catching it, you knew that wouldn't go well. But, you know, you see flashes from TJ Watt last year, like, oh, he actually has some pass rush moves to beat guys. Well, this is what Washington did over and over again, not just in the preseason games, but if you were on Instagram looking at Steelers, like, videos from training camp, I think that City of Six account, they put on videos every day from training camp. He did it every single day. And he made a huge catch over a guy. And then the next play made another catch where he broke a tackle and got a first down. I mean, his confidence must be going high. And that's what we need from him. We just need three catches and let one of them be a 30 or 40 yarder.
Sure. And then we let's turn our attention to the gunslinger. And Roethlisberger, 22 for 34, 235 yards, two touchdowns, and unfortunately, two interceptions.
So Ben had the same game that he's been having. I mean, really at the beginning of the game, I felt like he was just tearing them up at will. So decisive on those five receiver sets. He bought a lot of time with his legs. Like he's sort of this little flashback that he's been having this year with great protection from the offensive line and made some unbelievable throws that only three or four other guys can make. And then he missed a couple deep shots. I mean, he missed AB down in the end zone on that free play from offsides early, like in the first half. And AB had a step on his guy, and Ben had pressure barreling down on him, so he kind of had to throw it off of his back foot. But, you know, if he had completed it, we would have said, oh, my goodness, that was an incredible completion. What a throw. So it's not that surprising that he didn't make it, but we need to see him complete more of those because – that one that you talked about to Juju at the end of the game when they brought the blitz on third down and the Steelers and Ben threw it up to Juju and he almost made another beautiful Randy Moss catch, but ended up the DB made a nice play on him. Juju had a couple steps on the guy. And I'm not saying it was a bad throw by Ben. He gave his guy a chance and he had to throw off his back foot because the defenders were barreling down on him. But if he made it, we would have said, wow, what an impressive throw. But we need to see Ben turn it on and make those plays. And, of course, he had his brain fart interception of Juju. It was a terrible interception. And then the second one, I don't know, it's questionable. It was into kind of a crowd of people on like one of those old forward tunnel, not a tunnel screen, but like a little tunnel pass, if you will. Just got to stop turning the ball over, and we need to see him make those super elite Ben throws like the touchdown in between three people to AB. So he left some plays out there on the field, and that might be unfair to hold him to that standard, but I think that's what the difference is between the Steelers winning a Super Bowl this year, which they still have a chance to do, and them getting knocked out at some point, is Ben has to go supernova and make those crazy plays that are there for the taking and that we have seen him make.
Yeah, I think Ben got lucky. Patriots weren't able to capitalize on either one of those interceptions. Hold on while the herd in the South Florida seems to be, yeah, they seem to be maybe under attack. But the Patriots were only punted after the first interception. And after the second interception, they threw their own interception. So it wasn't, it just sort of hindered our ability to score, but it didn't really result in any points against us. But
right.
Doesn't mean it's okay.
No, it doesn't.
As a matter of fact, if you look at the statistics, Ben is he's like a young guy because the top he's in the top four in interceptions thrown with 15, and he's being rivaled by, listen to this list, Sam Darnold with 15, Josh Rosen, Jared Goff. The only old guy there is Andrew Luck.
Andrew Luck's a gunslinger as well. And when he's got, and then, but then unlike those guys, he's got the 30 touchdowns on top of it. So he's really taking this gunslinger thing really seriously.
Andrew Luck has 34. But Jared Goff at 27. I take your point, but I don't think there's the payoff for this gunslinging interception spree.
Right. So we know he's the greatest probably athlete ever. I mean, there's probably some cavemen before humans recorded, you know, athletic accomplishments, but I doubt that they would even hold a candle to what Ben Roethlisberger has provided the American people, and especially the people of the city of championships, the city of champions, if you will. Hopefully we're a city of championships after this year again. But anyways, Ben is turning the ball over too much. I mean, we've been saying this for weeks, and it's funny now he got another one of his buddies, no more Arians, but now he's got Fietner in there, and those guys tend to cut him loose. And listen, I think that's the right strategy. And he shows that he can make the plays. I mean, he can make the Ben Roethlisberger, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck plays. And we just need him to take his game to that next level where he is completing those crazy deep balls that we're accustomed to seeing him make and where he cuts down on those interceptions, because this team played great, but they're not as well-rounded as the other competitors. They're actually probably pretty far down the list when you look from an offensive, defensive, and coaching standpoint and consistency. Obviously, we love the weapons on the outside and the lines, but that's just what we think. I think it's an encouraging thing to realize. Like, this team has not peaked yet, and I think a lot of other teams have. And Ben, we've seen him get hot time and time again, and he didn't play bad. He played pretty well. I mean, the best things he did were dominate the very beginning of the game and make critical classic Ben Roethlisberger plays on that final drive at the end of the game. So I love seeing that. But if he can just take it that next level and catch fire and start making those crazy back foot throws when he's getting blitzed, man, the Steelers can beat anybody.
So moving to the other side of the ball, if I may, just sit for a second and think. We held the Patriots to 10 points. For all the foibles, the mistakes, the oversights, the Patriots didn't shoot themselves in the foot. As we pointed out before, their penalties, other than the drop passes, which was
right,
very uncharacteristic, the defense held the Patriots to 10. Now, I did look back. The Patriots have been held to 10 two games previously this year. But if you look through the drive charts, they punted five times in a row in this game. That the most they've done this season is three times in a row. And the number of scoreless drives, 78%. I mean, they scored on two drives.
And I mean, the fact that that was against the Pittsburgh Steelers, because I would think even if they had a one-legged prospector from the mines of San Francisco, they're still putting up 38 on us. It just, I mean, when you don't cover Kevin Hogan, or not Kevin Hogan, Chris Hogan, I mean, you're going to score some touchdowns, even if you got to, you know, bat the ball with your peg leg to get it there. The prospectors have peg legs, or is that just pirates? Maybe it was a pirate prospector. He washed up on the shores of Southern California, made his way up to the gold rush in Northern California. Anyways, well, think about this too, that the crazy miscommunication that resulted in the Chris Hogan TD was a horrible thing to happen at the beginning of the game, but it didn't happen again. So really, that was the Patriots' first drive. The Steelers held them to 3 points the rest of the way. The four drops, yep, they were critical, but we made mistakes too. The Steelers made mistakes as well. So, the drops are bigger mistakes. Well, maybe more obvious, but there were plays to be had, and you've seen what's happened to the Steelers the past few weeks and how close they are to winning or losing. It's not an excuse. It's not like Tom Brady threw the ball directly to them a bunch of times, or it's not like their tight end fumbled out of the end zone when he was crossing the goal line, or it's not like the running back fumbled when he got hit in the leg. No, and a lot of those penalties and the wounds were really inflicted by the Steelers players and the Pittsburgh Steelers crowd. So that was big time. Like we said, the defensive line was so dominant. And one thing I really noticed was that the secondary was gang tackling a lot better. It was kind of old Dick LeBeau style, where They were forcing Tom Brady to take the underneath completions, and they were zooming in. It was Sonic the Hedgehog up in there. It was Roadrunner. They were getting to the guys, and they were tackling them, gang tackling them, and getting them to the ground. And honestly, every time I saw that happen, I was annoyed. Because you're just thinking, where the hell has this been the whole year? I mean, you could tell they were amped up for the game. And they got to keep that level of amped up. But they did a great job.
They did. In particular, TJ Watt, he pretty much owned the right tackle, and I forget his name, but TJ Watt was close all game, and he finally was able to close in.
Yeah, so, I mean, TJ Watt, I mean, what I was referring to is more like the secondary members when they were tackling the catch, and it's like they're not – I mean, Hayden made a huge play, but other than that, it's not like they were batting down balls, but they were getting into the zone of the receiver after he caught the ball, and they were tackling him, and multiple people were tackling him, and the linebackers were flowing over the inside linebackers to finish those tackles, and I love that. But you talking about TJ Watt, I mean, you're on to something. I think he's really turning the corner now. He was fantastic for the second game in a row. And over the second half of this year, he's really turning into the star that the Steelers drafted him to be.
Was that irritating for me to be talking about a whole different position than the one you were talking about since I lost my place in the script?
I never get irritated hearing about TJ Watt.
Anyway, it's a pleasure.
It was a pleasure. I mean,
he has Hayward. To it, Harvey. I mean, there is just intense pressure from the front, and I think that we're watching the ascension of the defense. All kidding aside, I think the secondary is becoming less sucky. The move for Sean Davis, I mean, apparently he was really the guy responsible for the assignment on the Hogan play, but Sean Davis is, you hear about his name less. Joe Hayden is totally solid. We need to figure out some other parts in the secondary, but That front line is just so solid and highly rated in Pro Football Focus for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I mean, I do still think the Steelers' defense is severely lacking in talent, because even Joe Hayden, for his awesome play, he's about average or a little bit above average. Morgan Burnett's a total disaster. I mean, he needs to retire right away. Terrell Edmonds has been in the mix a little bit more, which is nice to see, but he's not going to make a play. You know, he doesn't make plays yet. Hopefully he does next year. I mean, we're not going to get too much into the next year talk, sort of like we did last week, but they need new inside linebackers and they need to find another difference maker in the secondary. But that's what makes it that much more impressive that they played so well, because the Steelers didn't let Edelman and Gronk beat them. And I do think, you know, Gronk's body's obviously breaking down. Edelman doesn't get to use steroids anymore, so that probably hurts him in his route running and his catching ability. And just, you know, general midget anger is lessened by the fact that he doesn't have his juice. Baby doesn't have his juice anymore. So baby doesn't have his juice. Baby's sad. But still, they got plenty of other guys. James White, I thought he was going to carve up the Steelers' inside linebackers. Josh Gordon, he barely did anything except for drop the ball. Cordarrelle Patterson has been a huge fixture in the game for the Patriots. In every game they played, he was non-existent. Devlin, the fullback, they have other guys they could get the ball to. Hogan, I guess we decided to cover him later. And I do think that the Steelers need more talent, but it was encouraging that even with that lack of talent, they were able to do that. And yes, I know the Patriots have been horrible on the road. They went 3-5 this year, but I don't care, man. The Steelers defense doesn't get that benefit of the doubt. This was a big step forward for them. And they're going to have a big test next week.
We had our own test again. I went a little fancy on the MyBookie and parlayed and got a little aggressive there. What happened to the Seahawks? It sort of let us down. I'll have everybody know that I did not. We always bet for the Steelers and that paid off, but I should not have parlayed that bet.
It paid off in a big way. You got to watch out for those interdivisional or intradivisional. Inter. It's got to be inter, right?
Intra.
Yeah. Intra will be across. Oh, no. Yeah. Intra is within?
Precisely.
Right, precisely. Well, Seahawks, yeah, they blew that. That wasn't fun. We had that my girlfriend and I had that on the other TV, watching that in the background. It was sort of soothing to just watch a game that, you know.
You don't care about?
Well, I like the Seahawks too, but, you know, I don't know if she's going to listen to this. Yeah, I mean, that was unfortunate. But you know what was fortunate? I mean, winning that bet on the Steelers. And even though we spent hours studying the Steelers, we didn't know if they would win. We don't know. But here's something that we do know. When we bet, we always use MyBookie. And MyBookie offers bettors in all major markets an entertaining lineup of gaming options. They got prop bets. They got fantasy bets. You can use that. Take advantage of that game within the game. You guys heard that before, right? That's good stuff. They got a ton of bonus options. And basically, they give you free money. I'm going to paraphrase this. I'm going to say they're going to give you free money. And then I'm going to be more specific and say if you make a deposit after 7 p.m. Eastern time, they'll give you an additional $25 free play on deposits over $100 as long as you use that promo code OUTPOST25. That's us, everybody. So visit mybookie.ag online today. And don't forget to use that promo code OUTPOST25 when creating your account to claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid. And remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. So bet with MyBookie.
Thank you. Let's look ahead to next week. Before we get to the Steelers game against the Saints, let's talk about the Ravens and the Chargers.
Okay, so before this three-game stretch, we knew the Steelers would need to win at least one of the games between the Patriots and the Saints. Well, it looks like they might need to win two because everybody in the AFC is winning. The Colts won. The Ravens won, of course. And I forget who else won, but everybody's winning. Let's put it that way. So the Steelers are actually in a position where they may need to beat the Saints. And I think that's because the Ravens are going to beat the Chargers. I'm telling you. So Keenan Allen for the Chargers and Melvin Gordon, they're running back. They're two best offensive players outside of Rivers. They were both out of last game. They're expected to play in this one, but I don't know what kind of strength they'll be at. But bottom line is the Ravens are a perfect matchup for the Chargers. When we saw this on the schedule, we saw Steelers have Pats, Saints, Bengals without Andy Dalton. The Ravens have the pushover Buccaneers, then they got the Chargers. That should be hard. And the Browns, that's not a gimme game. Well, I like the Ravens against the Chargers this week for this reason. I just think that the Chargers are tiny on defense. They have a small defense as it is, and all three of their best run stoppers are still out of the lineup, just like they were against the Steelers. But the Steelers weren't really able to take enough advantage of that. Baltimore has rushed for over 190 in the past three games, a streak that last happened with the 1976 Steelers, some say the best Steelers team of that dynasty. So they're going to bludgeon, have I been saying San Diego? Los Angeles into the ground. And then on defense, the Ravens can match up. They can match up with about anybody. So if the Ravens win this, the Steelers need to beat the Saints to keep pace.
We'll see. It's an away game. Anything can happen any given day.
That's true.
Cliche can I use?
No, that's very true. They're going to the West Coast. I'm not guaranteeing a win, but I do think that I know everybody's very high on the Chargers now. They had a high profile win against the Chiefs with a bunch of their guys injured. But I think that's a 50-50 game. So if they lose, great. Gives the Steelers a little bit more room to roll. I think the Steelers can actually clinch the division if we beat the Saints and the Ravens lose. But all I know is that it feels great, like a weight was lifted off our chest. And you know what, people? It was, because we beat the Patriots, so almost who cares what happens. But we're right back into the fire this week. It's another playoff game. The Steelers have to find a way to beat a couple of weeks ago, I would have said definitely the best team in the NFL at home. But the Saints have been a little bit off as of recently. So do we think it can happen? Of course, the Steelers can beat anybody, but it's going to be tough doing it on the road in that dome when Drew Brees is so good.
So what's scary is if you look at the numbers, the Saints are scoring 34 points a game to our 27. The really telling number is that they are scoring on over 50% of their drives, 50% of their drives. So defensively, they're strong too. I mean, the Steelers actually are a little stronger on defense, but looking at the schedule, looking at Drew Brees, I mean, he's going to – where the Patriots failed to exploit our weaknesses, our obvious weaknesses, it's hard to believe that Drew Brees won't be able to carve up that secondary.
The two teams I've always been most scared of as a Steelers fan throughout the history of watching the Steelers, you know, in the 2000s and on, two teams I've always been most scared of are the Saints and the Patriots, because just historically, the teams that give the Steelers trouble are the excellent pocket passers, the Hall of Fame ones to be specific, with offensive coordinators who can outsmart the Steelers defense, which we know it happens a lot, you know, post Dick LeBeau here. And you know what? It gives me a little bit more confidence that the Steelers shut down one of those teams just recently. And like we said, if Ben goes nuclear, you can beat anybody. Because when he goes nuclear, he doesn't just take points and put them on the scoreboard. He takes souls and he rips them out of the chest of the opponent. And then he buries them in midfield and creates a funeral pyre and burns the stadium down as he walks away into the distance, lighting a stogie off of the charring embers.
Wow. Well, there you have it. I think Dallas did a nice job. I think the keys. Can I just throw to the
I'm
keys
sorry, to that yeah. Dallas team? Yes, right. Please do.
All right. Please take another sip.
All right. Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to be easy to neutralize the Saints' number one receiver, Michael Thomas. I mean, Gronkowski, as you pointed out, is not the Gronkowski of old. I mean, we game planned between his demise and the game planning. We were able to neutralize him. Can you do that to their receiver the way Dallas did? And then you've got to contain Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram.
Yeah, and here's the thing, where in some ways I'm more scared of the Saints team because everybody seems to forget when they're talking about Drew Brees, the Saints. They went 7-9 3 years in a row before the last 2 years. And with all those awesome offenses, they had some bad teams because they couldn't get a defense together. So in some ways, I'm more scared of this Saints team than ever because their record's the best. This is the best Saints team since the Super Bowl run they had. But in other ways, they are not the same in the same way that the Patriots aren't the same, where Drew Brees isn't throwing the ball downfield. And now, am I saying Drew Brees is not going to carve us up? I'm not saying that. He's going to. He probably will, right? But they're a running team now. They run through the ground. And they have a fantastic offensive line. That's the one thing that makes me a little bit nervous. But you think that the Steelers are you know, that plays more into our hand. Now, of course, they can take it to the air, and they're so creative. And that's the main thing is worried about really Sean Payton beating up on Butler and Tomlin. But it's not like Drew Brees is going out there and launching the ball down the field all the time. They're doing more short intermediate routes, and he's been off as of recently. So I kind of think that the Steelers defensive line and the Saints offensive line is sort of a stalemate. So you really hope that Vince Williams and Fort and Bostic can make some big plays there. But, you know, I said this week the Steelers are going to need to score 40 to beat the Patriots, and we were totally wrong. But I still stand by the same sort of thought for the Patriots. The Steelers got to put up some points in this game. Maybe it's not 40, but they're not going to win with 17 points this week. We know that for sure.
Well, it's about time. It's about time to uncork. We've had a couple of games, low performing games, and Bob averages.
We'll see if James Conner comes back. I mean, that'd be huge.
Yeah.
They can do it. And they got their backs against the wall, and that's the way they like it.
Hey, look, this was a great episode, and I unlike you, I slept like a baby because of the just lack of stress. But we are here every week, and we're looking for your feedback because this should be a conversation, not just our opinions, your opinions. You can hit us on Twitter at @SteelersOutpost. Go to our website and leave a message at SteelersOutpost.com. We have an email address too. SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. And best of all, we have a new Instagram site, Steelers Outpost. You guessed it. Please visit us. Nick's trying to get his quick reaction to the game either Sunday night or Monday. And looking for some impact.
I love it how you call it Instagram site. That's a man who doesn't bother himself with social media. And you're a better man for it.
I have assistants who turn my computer on and off every day.
There you go. I like it.
Anyway, see you next week. Go Steelers.
We did it! We did it!
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.